Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Boucher with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. The professor is generous to comment on international relations, and we don't speak of domestic matters, other than to say what is going on in Washington right now is a ceremony that repeats itself every 2 years. It's exceedingly disappointing. It has to do with posturing by the two major parties. To what end is unknown. But in any event, we do know that the U.S. has provided a great deal of material to the Ukraine conflict and now is said to have vouchsafed F-16 training and or F-16 hardware to Ukraine. Said to. Now, Professor, I mentioned I could go through the list of weapon systems that Kiev wanted and Washington was not ready to ship over time, the year 2022 into the year 2023. The final one, because one by one the weapon systems were shipped, the final one was F-16s. I believe after this they would have to ask for B-52s, which I don't expect. But in any event, what we're looking at is a Washington either conceding to Kiev or changing its mind, or what is the policy that you can now discern in the Biden administration towards Ukraine conflict? Do they want to win all of a sudden?
Well, this question of whether they want to win is the one that is still unanswered. I think the idea is they want the Russians to lose, but they don't want the Russians to be angry about that. And this is very, very difficult to attain. So what we've done by default is instead of putting all the weapons in and whopping the Russians in the first 6 months of the war, we've been bleeding them out, like oxygen in the emergency room. And we've kept the patient alive, but if perhaps we had increased the amount of oxygen or we had increased the number of weapons, we would now be well involved into a mapping out of peace, because that's going to be the huge challenge. What worries me the most is I hear from people. I was talking to one person who's very well informed yesterday, and he's just back from Central Asia, and he was fretting. He said, isn't it at this time that the United States kind of steps in and says, look, you crazy countries, Clemenceau and everybody, we're going to make a peace, and we're going to get together at Versailles, and it's going to be a screwed-up peace, but that's because we Americans are involving, and you couldn't do better. You would only do worse. And I think that we have realized that the kind of war that we thought we were going to be supporting, which is going to be very, very brief, but heavy with sort of moral sentiment, but it's going to be a loss for Ukraine, is turning in to an unexpected win for Ukraine, which is having a sort of somewhat galvanic effect on Russia and China and others, in the sense that they realize that they're not really in the same league militarily with the United States, nor are they diplomatically. But of course, one reason we're strong is that we have many allies in spite of our defects, and they, owing to their defects, lack allies. But as I point out unfailingly every week that we talk, we have got to be thinking about what do we want the Eurasian continent to look like? How do we want power to be distributed geographically? Do we want the Russians still to be in Vladivostok, just north of Korea? Do we want the North Koreans to have nukes and the South Koreans not to? Do we think China should be able to recover some of her allegedly lost territory taken by the Russians? Or do we think that it's very important to take this opportunity to try to reconstruct a more friendly framework for Russia and the United States to deal with each other? Because it says nothing about Russia and America that makes them, by virtue of their place in the periodic table or something, elements that cannot be combined. We could have much, much better relations with Russia and with China, too. And it isn't our fault that they're bad, although the fact that we exist leads some countries, and it leads Mr. Xi in particular and Mr. Putin. It just drives them crazy.
Let me introduce some friction. There are said to be voices in Washington that remember the Cold War and believe the mistake was made at the close not to finish off Moscow. There are said to be voices in Washington that believe that Putin's instability is an opportunity to change the direction of Russia away from the paranoid police state it has been for 100 years. Those voices were young once. They're no longer young. They're in senior positions. Do you credit that the U.S. is ready to change Russia profoundly?
Well, it is impossible for the United States to change Russia profoundly unless Russia wants to change. And there, of course, is the long kind of duet in Russian history between the Westernizers and the Slavophiles. It's an oversimplification, but that's what we face now. And when you talk about making a profound change, when Mr. Gorbachev and Mr. Yeltsin appeared, who were quite novel when compared to Soviet politicians, they understood that they had to get rid of the old system, and they had introduced a new system. There were two people in the West who said this is an amazing opportunity, namely Ronald Reagan and Maggie Thatcher. But we were unable to do much, and when Reagan left office, George H.W. Bush came in, and he simply said, I'm not going to get involved in the complexities of trying to help Russia to be better. They're sort of the bad guys, so I'm putting in a good, hard-line Cold War team, because you can't lose doing that. And it wasn't our fault that Russia didn't work, but we could have done more to remove obstacles to Russia succeeding. So I think if now you get a leadership, and the Russians are the ones who are going to decide who their leader is going to be, we're going to have nothing to do with it. This is going to be a process that's going to take at least 5 years to figure out what the new regime is going to be. If they get leaders who realize that they have to make fundamental change, and then we make it clear that we will listen and we will cooperate and all the rest. There is, as I said long ago in this program, the logical thing for Russia to do is to become is to integrate with Europe. That's where Russia belongs, although she does have this Russian Orthodox Church, and people think of Russia as being this is back of beyond. But Russia is essentially a European style state, although under Patriarch Kirill rather than under the Pope or whoever runs the West, I think there is an opportunity there, but I'm very doubtful that anybody will go after that.
Their economy has been damaged, perhaps for a generation. We're told. I can't tell.
Yes.
The sanctions are leaky. And their workarounds, and they prepared for it. But in the event of instability, all that money would disappear. And the economy would be broken. And it would need as much investment as anyone can manage. I'm sure the bankers would be eager because there are major assets in Russia. But, Professor, I'm trying to entertain something that is not now in the argument, which is that if Russia fails, it will fail all the way. It won't fail a little bit.